Hey guys, this is John, and you're tuned into another amazing episode of the Mobile Radio Carnival with today's guest, blues musician, singer-songwriter Ryan Neville. Why don't we just start at it, man? Why don't you just tell the people who you are and what you're about, and we'll go from there, man.
All right. So, hello. I'm Ryan Neville from Christchurch, New Zealand. So, I've been really looking forward to doing this interview today to see you guys. And, so I've been in this band for quite a few years now. This is my blues-based band is Ryan Neville and the Midnight Blues Band. So, we've just released an album, and we're starting our tour in about a week's time, in fact.
That's fantastic, man. I was just going to call you a blues master from New Zealand, man. I have an idea. Hey, I have an idea, man. You really do appreciate the blues for some reason, because that seems to be your forte.
Yes. I've always, you know what? I really love the blues because I love the stories it tells. You know, this is the thing. It's all this myths and stories about the crossroads and, you know, that to me has always got me really excited and pumped. I just love that whole, it's, you know, every song is a story about a life. You know, it's just, I just found that very interesting. Yeah.
How does a lad from New Zealand get hooked on the blues? I mean, I'm from Detroit. So, you know, there's a whole serious rock and roll legacy, and as well as Motown and some great blues guys. And obviously blues being an American thing is the culture like down that got you hooked? How did that happen?
Oh man, that's so awesome where you're from. I love that place. But that's a very good point. I've always sort of grown up on Hendrix and things like that. I've been playing guitar now 30 years. So, you know, you start off with that. I've traveled to the States a few times now and just loved the culture and things like that. And I must say New Zealand, you know, we have a little couple of places called blues clubs, but certainly not like other parts of the world, unfortunately. So this is why we do get on a plane and we come and see you guys and we travel to kind of get amongst it. So, yeah.
So you got hooked and you started putting the blues down. You know, it's funny. I started the show with You Wish This Day Had Never Come. And, you know, when we were talking, that's what was playing on the show. And I got to say, there's a little Gary Moore influence in that lead that you place in there. And I looked at your notes as well. And I think you do note that Gary Moore is one of your heroes. You might not have used that exact word, but is that the case, brother?
Absolutely. Look, and it's always so nice to hear someone spot that in there because, you know, I mean, he was to me an amazing guitar player, as to most people.
So
influenced by his style, absolutely. Yeah,
it's interesting. That song's very interesting because it's got like this really solid blues riff, right? And it's got a beautiful like lyrical thing going on. I especially like the twist when you get around to like the bullet leaves the gun, I think is the line, and then it plays along, and then all of a sudden it's you know, because you're not doing a lot of like that kind of Gary Moore stuff in the piece itself. And that's what got me, was like all of a sudden there's this beautiful lead, you know, blues lead placed into it. And it's like, yeah, that tone, man, that's definitely a Gary Moore tone. Are there other cats that you, I mean, obviously Hendrix you already mentioned, but in the all out blues genre?
Yeah, look, it's really hard, isn't it? Because I've just for years tried to copy and play and listen to, as we all do, you know, for everything from, you know, B.B. King right through to the latest Kenny Wayne Shepherds of the world, you know, Sam Fish, all those amazing blues players. And that's what I love is I keep thinking that I know these players, and then someone else pops up and you're like, yeah, he was back in the 70s. And there's just so great blues masters. It's just, and that's what keeps it interesting and fun, is you keep finding these people and all their music. It's just fantastic.
Yeah. Well, so when did you start? I always have to ask guitar players you're a singer as well. Obviously I want the audience to know that, but when did you pick up your guitar? Were you out of the womb, or was it like later in school, or was it after school?
Yeah, so I had, funny enough, when I was very young, so I can remember back to being about 8 or 10, so my parents had a six-string acoustic guitar lying around the house, and at some stage I picked it up and played it, but I was quite fortunate that straight out of school, first band, you know, as you do, and not even a band at school, which is for most people it's a common thing, but it actually happened outside school, and played it, so 16, 17. In my first band, and we kind of hit the road from there pretty much, and I haven't put it down, which has been such a great ride, you know.
Well, the thing too that I find interesting is you seem like you have I have a rough time. I'm a singer. I don't know if you're aware of that, but I have a rough time with the whole touring aspect, but it seems like your history is you jumped on the road and you've kind of managed a way to tour for most of your outing here.
Yeah, so look, and you know what it's like, and you're right, you know, it's tough being a singer and a guitarist. There's so many things you have to look out for and work on, things like that. Yeah. Especially here, you know, we're here in New Zealand, we're in the South Island, so we have a North Island South. There's not a lot going on to actually book places and clubs, things like that. So to be honest, to keep that going is really hard. You know, you'd probably have a pick of 20 places, so to try and get around those constantly without being too boring and people seeing you too often, it really, I must say, is a skill in itself of trying to keep that interesting.
Well, I just thought too, like as a startup, even you guys can't just necessarily get in a van, pack in a van with the band and just take off. You're going to have to jump airplane flights.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is a whole new twist.
Oh, yeah. To make that happen, that's really awkward. And of course, you know, some of my band still work full time. So that's very difficult to kind of arrange. Yeah. And costs, you know what it's like these days, things have changed. So, and of course, we're miles away. As you know, New Zealand is quite a hike from other parts of the world.
Yes.
So the time difference and organizing that certainly is a bit of a challenge. Yeah.
And then are you able to tap into like the Australian marketplace or venues fairly easy because that's one of your closer, bigger markets, I would suspect.
Yeah, I wonder if I can say this live. It's quite
you can say whatever you want live on this one, brother.
Well, so really the easiest way to explain this is it's kind of like anywhere close, we kind of have this, what do you call it, kind of a funny joking fight with each other. So a lot of the Australians don't like the New Zealanders on their turf, and the same kind of goes. As I said, it's a joking thing we've always say. So to be honest, for a lot of us New Zealanders, it is quite tough to get work over there because they don't necessarily want us.
Oh, you know? I see what you're saying. Yeah.
With sports teams, you can imagine it. So with musos, it's the same sort of a thing.
Yeah, it's a Detroit-Chicago thing as well.
Yeah, totally.
You know, I get what you're saying. After high school, did you take other gigs, or were you just lucky enough to figure out how to make money as the artist?
Yes, I think I was very, you know, in that respect, very blessed. So yes, straight out of school, I teach music. I still do. So I've been teaching for 30 something years. Because I just, you know, love it. And you know, it's like you enjoy something you keep doing. It doesn't necessarily feel like work. It just, everything's a challenge and you get that drive. So, yeah, so that's pretty much what I did. Straight out of school, first band. Of course, that's changed. I've been in a couple of bands since. And, of course, I've been teaching all the way along. And that really, to me, was the way to do this full time, is to have my students.
That makes sense to me. I mean, I believe that's what Jorg ended up doing for many years. I know you and Jorg have touched base, I believe, at some point.
Yes.
And I think there's another cat that we play on Pluto Radio who I respect his guitar work as well, that's his thing. And it sure beats, I think, you know, for me, I roofed houses for some years while I was doing both theater and playing in bands. And
awesome.
I think I would have been better off finding an easier way to make the gig money. You know what I mean? But it's just what it is, man.
It's funny.
But I picked up on that vibe with you that it did seem like you've been traveling and doing it, which I think is really amazing.
Look, I must say that this year I found last year just a wee bit tough, and you know what happens sometimes in your life. You just start to kind of wear down a wee bit, and even my band, I haven't said this too, is that a plan for this year was to slow down, you know, almost to the point to let's just not travel this year. Let's dig into the writing and the recording, but I just can't. I'm sure you feel the same. It just becomes that drug. And as much as I wanted the rest and need it, it's just like, nope, we just keep on going because we love playing. You know, it is that drug.
I assume COVID slowed you down a little bit in the last couple of years, but for us, obviously, it was a big shutdown, and I don't want to dwell on it too much, but I'm sure that took a dent on you being able to be out there.
Yes, no, it did. It did. We were fortunate as we didn't have too much lockdown here, which was really good. I understand you guys did, so I really feel for you guys, but no, we didn't really.
It was good for you guys. Yeah.
So it was about a month. So we still were able to. There were a lot of restrictions, of course, but it wasn't as though it was a big, long lockdown. We were still able to record. And you know, it's like these days we can send files to different places so we don't all have to be together. So we still kept in pretty good shape. So we were very fortunate in that way.
That's very cool. Hey, so the thing I was thinking about was the town that you're from. Since you have traveled America, what would be the I have a buddy in Dublin who we came to the conclusion that Dublin was the Detroit of Ireland. And Detroit is the Dublin of the US, basically. So what area or what town or what city reminded you most of where you actually come from in the US?
In the US, I would say, to be quite honest, San Francisco.
Very interesting. Is that because of the climate or is that because of the beauty?
It's a few things because San Francisco, has the trams running through it, and we do too. Yeah. A little bit of hilly, you know, kind of hills, and yeah, definitely the weather. So there was actually quite a few things. So I say to people, go there first if you're used to living here in Christchurch and New Zealand. That's a great place to go and visit first.
That's very cool. Hey, you know what I'm going to do now is I'm going to put on Paint the Sky Blue. So that the people listening can actually hear what you do instead of just me yammering and hammering you with a ton of questions. How's that, brother?
Thank you so much. That's awesome.
Yeah, here we go.
were made. And the years seemed to go by so fast. We looked through the photographs. Remember how we used to laugh. Sky blue, and all the clouds in the sky have stopped questioning why. Well, I love you, and the sun only shines for you. We still paint those skies blue. We've left those cold days behind. Then night turns to day, and the colors still fade, and the moonlight still shines on through.
If you ask me, I mean, it's like got a somberness to it. And then you do this very interesting thing with this song. This song, when I heard it, it seemed to go through these very subtle changes for me. It kind of had this staccato rhythmic thing going for a while. Then it kind of surprisingly turned into a fluid rolling piece. I don't know how to really explain it, but it reminded me of a Motown arrangement, actually, but it still remains beautiful blues.
Thank you.
Yeah. And of course, there was a Gary Moore-esque lead as well in that one. So why don't we talk about this song for a little bit?
Okay. So Paint Sky Blue, it was one of those songs on my first record. And I must say, it took a long time to write. I really struggled. You mentioned before being a singer. For me, the musical side to any song I write is always quickest and easiest. I really, to be honest, struggled with the lyrics to the point where I've got another singer in my band, Emma, and I had to say, look, I'm struggling with this song. The lyrics are just not falling out. So to be quite honest, and she, I talk about this in the shows, is she wrote the first verse. And once she did that, it opened up for me to create everything else around that. But, as you know, a ballad is quite hard in that sense of you hear everything, every note, every expression. That's what it's meant to be. You're giving that listener the vibe and the feel, that kind of thing. And on my point is if you do it, you have to do it right. Fast song, you can hide things, you know, not that you should, but you can get away with things where that ballad to me, every note, you know, so I must be honest, I cringe every time I listen through the solo.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I think too that when you're talking about the blues, it can be very difficult because you have to make something very simple, but say a lot at the same time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can understand. My point is I can understand with your lyrics, maybe you bump the wall and maybe you're pressing it too hard or whatever. So it's easy to do, I think, with the blues.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what it's like? We always laugh, right? The only subjects you can write about is a train, your dog died, and your girlfriend left you.
I think they do that here with country. It's like your pickup truck, your dog, and your woman left you. And maybe the brand of whiskey you prefer.
That's right. So yeah. It's getting started to kind of reinvent the wheel, isn't it?
Yeah. And it was paint the Sky Blue too is like you use a delicate vocal quality as well, I think, that's still bluesy, but how do you determine like what aspect of your voice you want to put in? Because some of your songs are somewhat spoken song, and then yes. Like yeah, how is it just a feel when you write? Are you just like, this is the way it feels to me, and this is the way I'm going with it?
Yeah, and that is true. You know, like again, everyone has their own way that they write, right? So, of course, for me, it's music first, and you get this idea. And of course, you know, I can't sit here and say I didn't copy other songs because we all listen and pick up all these different things. So I kind of get a concept of it, but it's a very good point because I tend to have a gruff voice. Well, I tend to like to sing with that rocky thing. So it was quite difficult to bring that back down, thinking, Ryan, it's a ballad. You've got to be gentle on this. But I also like what I call that hot and cold thing. I kind of like to push a point. You growl a bit more. So, I mean, you know, I'm sure you're the same when you sing. It's that emotion coming out, but then you want to be sweet. It's that hot and cold effect.
Yeah. That's one of the things, too, when you were mentioning that you ran into difficulty, I suspected that was part of it, too. It's like, what part of that more gentle, you know, process where, you know, it's like, where do you draw the lines? I was working on, Jorg and I did a cover of Red House.
Oh, I love that song.
And well, hopefully when we get it out there, you'll get a chance to, I mean, he's amazing. And it's a really, I think it's a really strong, you know, version of the tune. But ironically, both of us ran into a problem with it. Like I sent him over my vote, and I did that in my bar band, you know, all the time. But with him, I had to listen to what he was doing and integrate my choices within that.
Wow.
And I just felt like I sent him some tracks because I kind of gave up. I'm like, dude, I don't know. I go this because I know they were all like good tracks. But yep. I sent him the tracks and he was basically like, he goes, you know what? Just take a breath and do one more take.
Wow.
It made me realize like, yeah, I was just pushing it. Like I was trying to make it bigger than it was because I had Jorg playing the guitar on it. And then it was his turn and he kind of fell into the same trap. I think I found that really interesting.
It is, isn't it? And yeah. As you see, you've got to be careful of those songs because fast songs, it's, you know, easier to kind of go, oh, look, it works, but you've got to be. And look, and I must say, and I'm sure you agree. I mean, Jorg is a great friend and an amazing player. And I'm really, to be working with him under his record label, but it's been great fun. But yes, I'm looking forward to hearing that song.
Yeah, I'm not sure where we're putting it because I'm trying to get him over here so he and I could go out and do just some blues. But you know, that's in the future, in the not too distant future, hopefully. Hey, one of the things I like to ask every artist is the whole social media vibe because. Well, 2 years ago, prior to COVID, there was a lot of frustration with social media and having to be everywhere and trying to cover it all. So it's kind of changed. I think people now pick and choose a little more what they do. Where are you at with your social media?
Yeah, listen, you know, being brought up without it, it definitely is such a big learning curve to kind of get your head around it that it's just as important as writing a good song, isn't it? That whole marketing thing.
Yeah.
Now, I must admit, it is tough to keep up with everything. So I'm trying to be on everything I can, but it's just that time. There's a lot of time involved, isn't it? So you have to schedule that in. It's great and it's awesome that we're able to get out and reach people in that way, but it's not necessarily an easy thing to do, is it?
No, it hasn't been for me at least. I think when I work with Jorg, he struggles with it quite a bit in the sense of I think it's that German sense of like I can conquer everything, and I think he ends up with a lot of work out of it, you know, and it's a lot to task.
Yeah, and he is incredibly good at it. That's right. I'm always asking him so a couple of tips and things like that. But yeah, and it, like I said, great that we have it, but it's you've really got to get your head around it. Things change often, so you have to be ball, right?
Yeah. So the thing about social media is like it brings you your audience, right? So is there a way to determine where your largest audience might be? In other words, you know, can you track it anyway? Do you know that the US fans are generally, yes. How's that stand with you, man?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, the good thing about it is things aren't they improving, you know, to the point where we can really hone in on the type of audience. So again, for me, that is the hardest thing to kind of do. And as you said, I mean, yeah, in America, that is the more obvious place for us to send a lot of our new songs and things like that, and do have promotions and things. So yes, absolutely. But yeah, it's getting your head around how to approach that, not just send it out to everybody. There's a whole lot of blues clubs and blues Facebook pages and stuff, which is awesome. So that, to be honest, is where I obviously spend most of my time.
Yeah, I that would have been my guess, especially because you have this really interesting talent of sounding like a traditional blues guy, even though I think you tend to tweak in kind of different elements as it progresses in your songs, which which is really the most fascinating thing when I listen to your music. It's like the one I'm going to play next and the next break is Midnight Train, and that's got this big kind of jazzy blues thing. It's almost like with some of the vocal arrangements, it felt like a Tom Jones 60s show, you know, because you got some nice vocal arrangements in there. And I mean that in the kindest way. I love Tom Jones. I know it might seem hokey, but it has this great 60s arrangement vibe in it. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to say thank you for saying that. It's, you know what it's like? It's really hard yourself to listen back to things and kind of spot those. So it's really nice to have an input and hearing those things. And like I said, earlier, being kind of restricted with song ideas, it is very difficult. I don't want, as much as I love other styles of music, I'm trying to stay in that blues thing. And of course, you know, it's really difficult. Sometimes you think, is it a bit too rocky? Is it a bit too jazzy? Is it a bit too rock and roll? So I do work hard at trying to kind of pull all that back in, because I said I love other styles. So that sometimes is a bit of a struggle. So that, like you mentioned before, sometimes you'll hear sections go, man, that's really bluesy. And then it goes off in another, you know, spot, and then of course you hear me bring it back, because it's that worry of me going, I don't want to go too far down that track. So yeah,
because I can see you have the talent for it, but the thing is, if you don't infuse it with something that has a hint of who you are, your personality, or if you just do straight blues, I think you run the risk, honestly, of boring your audience, because I've heard you know, Howling Wolf, and I've heard John Lee Hooker, and I've heard, you know, so if you're sounding just like him, I'm going to divert back to, hey man, I can just listen to John Lee Hooker. I don't need to listen to this cat. You know what I mean? So I think that it's nice because you build in different elements, but you still stay on this blues path. That's at least my impression.
Oh, look, and thank you for saying that. I'm so pleased that you picked up on that. It's not, because yeah, you're absolutely right. There is the skill in trying to do that. You don't want to just repeat yourself in the same old and be right. Like everyone trying to introduce that, but yeah, it's hard to, isn't it? Because you don't want to go too far afield, and that's and honestly, that's my thought process when writing. It's, you want to remind people of the good old days with the blues and all those greats, have a wee bit of that in there, but also showing that you're pushing forward. And I mean, the blues at the end of the day, a lot of people ask me that question: what is the blues? Well, to me, it relates itself, right? It can be anything and everything. It's different stories. That's the biggest thing it is for me. But of course, every style will, you know, over time evolve as well. So it's always just, you know, putting a little bit extra in, but staying true.
Well, I think too, in what you're saying, I mean, you also have to boil it down to the broth, opposed to worrying about, you know, turning it into a whole big rich soup. You know what I mean? It is that whole idea of how do you keep it simple? And that's what I like, is your elements that you add in don't, like overpopulate the spice, if that makes sense.
Yes. Yeah. And as I see, there's a lot of skill involved in doing that.
There is.
Yeah. But look, I must say, I've never asked this question, but it's very interesting. Again, because we always, don't we, associate blues with that American style. You know, there's other parts of the world that do blues as well, but for most cases, it's that American. Well, for me, it was anyway. So, you know, people say to me often, oh, when you sing, you have that typical American accent. So that goes hand in hand to what we're just saying. There's a fine line between that Kiwi accent and trying to have that American accent at the same time. So it is a bit tough. So I'm kind of on the back foot.
Well, you know what's interesting about that? When I started Pluto Radio, I used to play this band called the Stone Cold Boys, and they're Russian guys, right? And they they're hard rockers, and they, you know, it's a three piece, and they speak Russian primarily. Their English is broken, so when they sing their songs in English, it's got this bad dialect aspect to it, which I think makes the songs so much better than if it was an articulate singer like me. The songs would suck, but it's got this energy. And I think if you're talking, because I didn't notice any accented vocal thing with you, but I think that's because we all speak English, and you're going to hit your A's, and you know, when you're holding notes, they're just held notes. You know what I mean? You're not going to hear an accent in that per se. But I would think that you have an advantage in a way, because you're going to sound slightly different. You're going to have a different hue than a lot of American blues singers, I would think.
It's true, and it's true. And I'm again, pleased that you said that, because that is a struggle for me. It's that concern all the time. You know what I mean? So that's nice. And it does make sense that is true. Yeah, to have that different spin on it, right?
Yeah, because you know, I used to sing at a jazz club, and the lady who... It was a duo, and they were semi famous in LA here. And she would ask me up, and I'd go, "Hey, I don't do what you do. I do blues," and they did jazz. And she finally talked me up, and we would end up doing this strange melding. And the things that I worried about, anyone listening didn't care.
Funny, isn't it?
Part of that was she was so masterful at what she did that she melded to me, and I started to learn how to listen to her. And it was really this inspirational thing. But I think that like the rules or the idea of I'm going to sing blues, so I got to learn to talk like this, and I'm going to go out and sit on the porch and shoot up heroin because that's the only way I can feel this shit. You know what I mean? You know, I think that's a misnomer.
Yeah, that is true, isn't it? But I think, you know, for like, you know, we're sort of brought up on that idea, right? So I think that's, and you take that, there's probably a lot of more magic we can create. Yeah, absolutely. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And then you, like you say, like, or I read or what I was telling you about Midnight Train being this big jazzy blues thing. I only say jazzy because it's got kind of a flash and a bounce to it. That's not just down and out blues.
Yeah.
And like I say, the way that you spice with, you know, the vocal arrangement and things like that, it had this cool, like 60s TV vibe to it. So
nice.
Yeah. And so, oh, by the way, I'd like to mention some nice slide work as well.
Thank you. Thank you. I don't play slide enough. I could play that all day, every day.
That's a nice bit. And I'm going to put this song on right now, in fact, so that people can hear what we're talking about.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thank you, brother. Here it is.
I climb the mountain, some days I swim the sea. There are days when I cannot rest, and two, you're in my arms, lying next to me. Lying next to me. I'm coming home to you, baby. I'm coming home to you, baby. On that midnight train. Midnight train. There are days when I'm feeling happy, there are days when I'm feeling bad. Those days without you I'm alone, and I can't help but feel sad. I'm coming home to you, baby. Lord, I'm coming home. Train.
far too long. Too many nights that I've spent all alone. I'm coming home. I'm coming home. I'm coming home to you, baby. I'm coming home to you, baby. Lord, I'm coming home to you, baby. On the midnight train. On the midnight train.
Again, I think that that song has just its cool own funky vibe that works completely, man. And that's one of the reasons why I picked it. And again, it's like this Tom Jones, ultra cool, ultra hip, but it's still very bluesy, brother. So I compliment you on that.
Thank you. And like I said before, it's a bit of an art to try and make it happen. And it came out of the idea of performing it live. You know, a lot of us worry when we write, you know, how's it going to sound live? So that was really purely written as something high energy and just danceable, singable, that kind of thing. So that's where that kind of stemmed from, to keep that train up and rolling on the tracks, I guess.
You know what's funny? Once you said that, I'm like, oh my God, how do you do that live?
Yeah. So it is. It's great live because it has, as you said, a lot of sort of energy through it and things like that. So I played the slide part. We had a keyboard player and things like that. And it fills it out beautifully live. But that is always a challenge, isn't it? You know, yeah. I don't know your thought on that, but a lot of people write just so that they can play it live. They daren't overdub anything because in case they can't. But to me, from my point of view, it's such a wrong approach. I like to just write a song, let the song evolve to what it's meant to do, and then try and play that live. Yeah.
Do you get tortured with the bits, or is it like a relaxed process for you?
Yeah, I struggle, I must say, to be honest, I do. There's certain things that I do that I kind of, you know, learning to let go, I think, is the art to it, to keep the energy up when it's performed, regardless whether you cover all the bits or not. It's just, yeah. So that is, it's always on my mind, let's say, of hoping that I'm presenting the song the best I can.
Yeah, I hear you on that. Well, let's talk about your band, man.
All right.
What you have two ladies that play with you, and then two gentlemen assist as well.
Yeah, and look, it's so good. One of the most important things, let's say, to me is having a team and a band of people. You know, I've always said this, whether it's right or wrong, but my approach is always picking people first and foremost that you get on with, that are good people over skilled and you know, that kind of thing. So I'm really blessed having these guys in the band because they mean a lot to me. When we go on stage together, and I'm sure you feel this with bands, is that, you know, you have to have each other's backs. It's just, there's something about that connection that you can't, I certainly haven't been able to explain to people. So as I said, we get on really, really well, and the extra bonus is they're incredibly good at what they do. So Sandy Wilson on keys. And it's interesting, you pointed out before about the jazz element. She's straight out of our very, very high quality jazz school. It's a very famous school we have here. And so she is just amazing with the jazz work. So anytime you hear our songs jazz, it isn't me. It's her influence on things.
I heard, I can't remember which song it was because I dove through a ton of your music the last couple of days, but there was one piano part that I heard, and I was like, wow, that's pretty advanced. So yeah, kudos to Sandra.
Yes. And I love the fact, my approach, I've always said to the band, and they don't like me for it, but when I write something, I give it to them and I say, I don't want you to ask me questions. I want you to express on it. I really love that, of just saying go for it. Whatever came out of you is how that song was meant to be. And then of course we have Emma Sperry. She's great. She's one of our singers, of course, in the band, and she's got a beautiful voice that covers a lot of different styles of music. We've got Nick on drums, and of course he's a great guy. He's a real laugh. We love Nick because he pulls the band together in that respect. There's a lot of fun on the road and things like that, of course. And that helps. You have to keep it fun and enjoyable, right? It has to be a good time. So we're really pleased to have Nick in our band. And of course, you know, on bass, we have John Mackey, and he's, again, he's really a talented bassman, a great backing singer, And he's the one, to be honest, is holds the band together. I've now finally been able to let go and given him the role of the actual musical director for our band. So I say to the band, don't ask me any questions, ask Mac.
Yeah.
So really, you've found that in bands to have someone to take that load off and just make life easier.
Well, you stitched right into kind of what I wanted to talk about, because you're you are the band as far as name goes. Was that a progression? Did you always start off being the guy with a band, or were you in bands and you know, arose to being captain of the team? How did that work for you?
Yeah, like most of us, I've been in other bands and things like that, and I just found that a wee bit tough. Just for me to kind of make sure everyone's on the same page, and I just found it easier to. I had written a lot of songs, and then it was just really a need to get a band together to go out and perform those. So I've been really fortunate to be able to choose. And as I said before, the most important thing is to get them in to interview them. And as they'll all say to you, you know, it was quite unusual. It wasn't Ryan asking what I play, how I play it. It was just sitting down and having a coffee, a conversation, because I just wanted to get to know those people, because that to me means, you know, everything is that enjoyment and band and, you know, vibe.
Yeah.
So I was lucky enough to be able to create this band, that's for sure.
Well, just from what some of the things you've said, it seems like a pretty even keeled approach. And if you're kind of assigning, you know, a number one to help you out, because I've always found that tends to be better too, especially musically. If I'm even having a rehearsal, and I'm not a musician's musician in any way, I can play a couple instruments kind of, and it's so much easier to look at, you know, whether it be the bass player or the guitar, but whoever, you know, you're just like, hey, just refer to so-and-so on that.
Yes.
You know, and it makes it, I think it takes a lot of the tension out of a rehearsal too, trying to explain some high-end musical mind in my primitive way, you know, and I don't want to put that on you, but you know what I mean? Where it's easier if that cat covers it.
Yeah. And that's true. And it's like everything, it's drawing those strengths out, isn't it? It's like, yeah. You know, all probably do their job, but John was just very good at doing that. So it just made sense that he was even better than me. I mean, you know what it's like, you work to your strengths, and it just was like, okay, like I said, it's hard also when it means everything to you and you've been controlling. That's not necessarily the word I wanted to use, but you know what I mean. Yeah. Of everything. So it took a wee while to, I'm still doing that, of going, no, let John tell us how it should be. And he's aware that I'm happy for him to even say to me, Ryan, you're not playing that right. I mean, it's all about doing the best you can, and having someone helpful like that spot point things out that you may not know yourself is so, so good. And I'm more than happy to hear that.
Yeah, I think it's super smart, man.
Yeah.
And your results happen because of it. So that, and your results are good, if you ask me. This is just a curiosity question. Have you ever seen any weirdness about the fact that you have ladies playing the blues? Not that I'm attempting to be sexist in any way, but I suspect the blues world might have an attitude at some point, like, wow, a woman playing blues keyboard, you know, what's up with that? Do the ladies in your band ever run across that?
Look, that is a very good point. And to be honest, I've never really sat down and thought about that, which means that we haven't had too much trouble with that, but I certainly understand what you mean. But it'd be a great question to ask them how they felt with that, because that's right, you know, we're expected. And of course, in fairness too, I've got to try and remember that to have that element in the band. And I mean that from the point of view is that when I songwrite, I tend not to sing with lyrics that are very male, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, like my woman left me, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, yeah, I get you.
That's quite funny. I definitely have that in my mind, which is great. But yeah, no, as I said, be good question to ask them. The odd thing online, you know, I've had the odd question about that. So it's been interesting, you know, like there's women's blues groups, and if I dare pop us in there, it's like, hold on, Ryan, you're only half male. And, you know, so.
Yeah, I gotcha. I mean, I would like to think that it doesn't matter to me personally. I think it has to bring in a more interesting edge at some point in the game. Right. But
absolutely.
I just also know how many, you know, melon headed friends I have that might say something stupid like that. And you're just like, dude, get off of it, man. If she can play, she can play. What difference does it make? And I was just curious, because you've done a lot of touring, and I was just curious if you actually bumped into that. Doesn't sound like you have, man.
it's good. It's been lucky. No, we haven't really. And as you said, I mean, I couldn't see it that we didn't, because they what they bring and that softness, beautiful voice, and just to me is everything. Yeah.
It really is a cool thing, man. That so how did you ever bump into my buddy Jorg?
It's going back a few years now.
Wow. I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, it's like you just put yourself out there online. I think I came across something. We're on another record label, both of us together. We're on another label. And that's how we kind of banged into each other. And I found him, I think, with some really good songs that I enjoyed of his. And we got to talking. And as you know, he's such a lovely, easy to get on with guy and such an absolute amazing talent.
Yeah, he is.
Became friends, and his you know, guitar collection is the same as mine. We've got all sorts of things. So we've spent hours, you know, sending each other pictures and photos and chatting online and showing guitars. You know what it's like, don't you?
Yeah. Well, I know what it's like for you guys, for the guitar players. I do know that. Did you ever get a chance to online just jam with them, or is there always too much latency?
Yeah. The odd time. We've done a couple of interviews together. And that's been a lot of fun, but not as often as what I would like. Yeah.
And then, so has he helped? Has he worked on any of your music in a production aspect?
Oh, yes. I was going to say not necessarily performed on, but right. We're working on. Love to get him on something of mine and or be on something of his, you know, to be joint forces.
Yeah.
But my material I send to Jorg, as you know, he has a studio and he has mastered quite a few of my tracks. So again, really lucky to have him on board to be able to do that for me. So as often as I can and time and everything else, I send them to him because he's got such a good ear and does such a job. Yeah.
Well, speaking of studios, I noticed that I think I saw somewhere recorded at Voodoo Studio. Is that your studio?
Yes, it is. Yeah, it's my studio here that I've owned and run for many years, and used to be for everyone else, but now I've just had to put so much of my own recordings. I've shut the outside world down, and fortunate to have it built into my house. So this is where I do all my recordings.
And so, did you start producing? Did you start with like a Tascam 4 track back in the day, and you just slowly built up and learned all your chops at producing, or just one day did you just go, I'm going to just learn how to do it?
Oh man, I'm so blessed to have that opportunity. To have started it, way back in the day of tape.
Yeah.
Just young enough to get on the edge of that, and that to me still to this day means so much, to really get in the understanding of that. And just as you said, I built my way up and learning the craft of how to edit with you know, every software on the planet. I currently use Pro Tools, but that learning curve, but it has been really good to have come from tape reel to reel and all that kind of thing.
Yeah,
so
I did as well, actually. So
oh good.
Yeah, I was in a studio years back in the Detroit area that their big claim to fame was they had a Synclavier.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and it's just like, it's like only an older geek like me would even know what the hell it is. Not to say that that's where you are, but but it was, I just remember thinking, wow, this is really cool, because there's a whole like room that's dedicated to this piece of equipment. When you play a key out in the studio, it's this whole room that's creating whatever sound you pick. You know, I just remember being enamored with all that.
Amazing.
And then the whole switch to, you know, all my musical buddies going, you know, CDs will never last. You know, that whole thing.
Yeah.
It's too digital. Yeah, that's what it is, man. So.
Oh, look, I have so much respect for, and still to this day, watch a lot of, you know, recordings and that back in the day, the reel to reel. I mean, those guys were absolute masters.
They were.
From production band, absolute, you know, engineers, was just incredible. So I have so much respect for that era of, and again, that ties into the blues thing. I just love how those guys did it. I mean, what they created without the tools that we have today was, to me, just absolutely unbelievable.
I met a guy from Golden Studios, I think it was called, out here in LA, and he was an old guy, and he explained to me why I forget if that's the right name of the studios, but I guess everyone recorded there in the 60s, and the reason they did is because of their reverb. And he explained to me there was an actual bell that they made about the size of a small room that they would hoist. They had a microphone in it and they had a speaker in it, and they would send the guitar from the studio into the bell, and to change the reverb, they would lift it. mechanically. Yeah.
It's fascinating, isn't it? What they did.
Yeah.
And the organization of that is just incredible.
It's amazing. And the reason I brought that up is because I think it was on the first song, the opening song I played, You Wish This Day Had Never Come. There was a drum sound in there. Like the way that you EQ'd the drum was just, it felt like such an old school, like 70s approach to the drum. And it's just the sound of it. That was one of my first, you know, it's kind of like, it doesn't sound like the Humble Pie drum, but it had that clean, like snap to it. And it's just like, boy, that sounds like a really cool 70s drum.
And it goes back to what you were saying before about, you know, I was saying about trying to keep a little bit of that original sound in there, but sort of freshen it up with new vocal effects and things like that. So it's certainly something in my mind from a production point of view is trying to keep that essence of that sound, remind the listener of that, or make them, you know, go, oh, that, like you just said, it reminds me of that time and that place. So yeah, absolutely. I think I spend enough time creating that vibe.
Well, plus the you know, it fills the space really well too. You know what I mean? Just for its own purpose in the song, it really was a great choice for the song as well. Hey, I wanted you to talk a little bit about I missed the deadline. We wanted to get this going before the release, but let's talk about your new release. What's that all about?
Yeah, so we just released album number
5, right?
Actually, there's been a few more in between.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. That's doing good, brother.
If you thought it was 5, it's my mistake for not adding enough, having the time to upload them all onto. They're all on Spotify, of course, all of those.
Nice, man.
Yeah, so I'm really happy that it's just something that I struggled to start songwriting. And once those flood doors open, I just am hooked on it. I try and write something at least once or twice a week. So the new album being Voodoo.
Yes, sir.
And it was a pleasure to write in this, but in the saying that it was the longest to happen. It's just COVID, as we said before, did certainly slow that down. It was supposed to be released at this time last year. So to be honest, it's been a year in the making, and the changes we've all found with all the digital online stores about not necessarily releasing it as an album now. So it had to come out as singles. It certainly has been an album for me that I can look back on and remember the process to it as much as the recording side, because it really took a year to be able to pop that album out. Yeah.
Would you say that it is mostly more straight blues than some of your other work? Would you say it's as indulgent to yourself?
Funny. Yeah, that's a hard one, because I must say a little thing that's something I tend to do is it's a tough one for me to listen to an album. It's a little process. It's a month later, almost to the day before I'm actually able to get back in and listen to it. I just like to step away from it. So I'm now thinking about what are those tracks, and I'm trying to sort of remind myself of the time and place and things. But yeah, I did try, like I said earlier, try to keep that original blues sound, try and also to add some differences to there. I always love ballads, and like I said, the Gary Moore style, I like to kind of pop that in there. So to me, and that's the thing I'm not necessarily a fan of at the moment, is the release of singles, because an album to me tells a story. It's a journey. So to me, every song, the order of those songs, the ideas of those songs came out at the same time. So it's difficult for me to release one and then 6 months later release another one, because they should be next to each other, if that makes sense.
No, it makes sense to me.
But you know, and I know that's the way things have gone, but that is a struggle for me to get my head around that process.
Yeah. Do you hear us? I find myself sometimes, a lot of times, where I hear something I did, say, 2-3 years ago, and I didn't really like it overall when I let it go. And I'll go, wow, I actually, what was I thinking? I really dig that. Or the opposite, where you're like, what the hell was I thinking that day? I could have done this, or I could. Do you question it, or do you just go, nope, it's cool the way I did it? And
no, look, that is a really good point, and it's something, you're absolutely right, that I do. The point where 99% of the time I look back over and actually go, wow, that was the track I was most concerned about, that I didn't get my point across, and like that. And you know, there's many songs that I will listen to and actually go, I'm so impressed. And I'm not saying that in any way.
No, I hear you.
You know what I mean? It's just, for me, it is such a powerful thing. It really is, because you're so pleased. You created something, and sometimes I said, I walk away shaking my head going, I hope it's okay, with fingers and toes crossed. And then, of course, like you said, you sometimes listen back and quite surprised. And there's quite a few songs that I'm actually quite proud of now. Not necessarily at the time, but I am now. It's funny.
No, I get it. Yeah.
No.
Do you think that's because of the stress you own when you're doing it? Maybe stress is the wrong word, but you know, the anxiety of like perfection. It's not, I don't think you're, maybe you are, but I don't think a person is just trying to satisfy their idea of what the audience wants. I think you're trying to satisfy the pursuit of perfection, I would guess.
Yes. And look, I would love to, as I'm sure a lot of singers, songwriters would like to say that it's all about the crowd and how people, but yeah, absolutely. A lot of reason you do a song is because it's expressing something from yourself, isn't it? Yeah. And it's getting point across. And yes, I definitely think, you know, it's funny. I don't know why I have this in my head, but I relate this to you. You've just bought a house and you're trying have to paint. It's an older house. You're painting the house. Well, you're covered in paint. It's everywhere. You can't see how good it looks yet because you've got to tidy everything up. That's exactly, in my mind, how I relate writing a song. So I need to clean myself up, pack up stuff, take a step back, breathe, you know, have a coffee, and then sit back and assess the song. And that's what takes me a month to do. So absolutely, I think it's the stress and just, you know, the good and the bad that went into it. And sometimes you're hiding a couple of things that weren't necessarily as perfect as you would have liked. And,
yeah.
Now, this is the problem with us human beings. We have doubt sometimes, you know, so absolutely. It's the stress of it, I think.
I think that's a great analogy, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Hey, you know, you alluded to the thing that goes on in many conversations with musicians. Audience who is listening might not understand this. You talked about the idea of how albums are devalued in the sense that, as you described it, one song relates to the next song at least in the way that you order them.
Yes.
Now, in the contemporary, if I understand it correctly, what you're talking about is the idea that releasing singles is the way to go. Is that what you were talking about?
Yes. Yeah. So that's, I mean, you know, I totally am all for, you know, the world is changing and it's advancing and things like that. And this is how we're listening to music now. And I've forgotten the stats, but how many songs are being released every day and people are not having the time to listen to an album. But it's a little tricky when you're brought up on that. I'm not sure if you were the same, but, you know, you'd buy one album, you know, a year, and right, you'd spend taking that journey from start to finish. I was taught as an engineer and to do production that an album must have a flow to it. So how do you create that flow when you're releasing one song? I'm a massive fan of theme, you know, everything that's got a theme and a story to it. I picture my songs when I write. And again, not that that's for everyone, but that's how I approach a song and a story and an idea. So the album to me is a full thing. It's hard to pull it apart and just give you a piece of it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting, right? Because if you have a song, you know, I Love You, and you have a song, you know, I Don't Love You, right? So you have two songs, and on an album, they would tend to have those two songs, and those 10 or 12 songs would tend to have the same engineering processes involved, because you have a team, you have the time span is tight with the band. Some of the themes are going to overlap from one song to another, even at a non-conscious level, you know what I mean? Where it's just going to naturally happen because you're thinking about one song, it's going to bleed into another song. And that's part of what I think made an album interesting. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. And from an engineering point of view, which is what you're mentioning, is that it's so hard. It's why what I have to do is to kind of record it all in one go. So meaning some, you know, an album for me roughly is 2 to 3 months. So therefore from the process, tracking everything down to engineering, mixing and mastering. But then what's really hard for me when I'm so excited about it is to then pop one out every 6 weeks. Do you know what I mean?
Because that's exactly what I'm pointing to, is the idea now is as hard as you, if you took the first song, I Love You, and you were going to pair it with I Don't Love You, and then you go and you do the first song in January, and then you do the second song in March, those innate qualities, just because it's being worked on collectively, are going to be not there.
Yes.
And so each song does become kind of its own song in a way. And there's maybe good or bad in that, I don't know. But that's what I find fascinating about the new process.
Yes. And I think that's it, isn't it? Just for me, getting my head around the idea that is the approach. So you're right. Instead of necessarily tying everything together, a song should stand alone and be. So, you know, I love that idea. It's a new challenge for me to actually create the story in the individual song, not rather than try to create it over 10 songs. You know, it's like trying to cross it, isn't it? Where it makes you, I in my mind, a better songwriter because you have to try and give that listener the idea straight away. Not like, okay, you might not like the first song, but by the time you get to the third one, you'll get the idea of where I was going with this. Now you have to do it to one song. So I believe it makes you a better songwriter.
I think, you know, I think it probably will. It's just, it's something I'm fascinated with. I still don't, I don't know that I'll ever get an answer if it's better or worse, but it is different, right? To your point where like, for a guy like you who's stated, like, I love the idea of an album because of the way that it stitches together, it's kind of like you have to engineer in a different direction with the way you're doing it, because you already know you mastered doing it that way. And now it's like, well, now I got to do it the other way. And I don't know if I like it, you know? And I guess that's the part that fascinates me. Like a guy like you, that's a little bit torturous in a way, because it's easier to do the other way.
Yes, true. Yeah. And look, as I said, it's a learning process to do it. And this is, again, I love Yorg because he is on my butt about doing that. As you know, he's like saying, Ryan, you've got to get out of that process of the fact that, you know, let it sort of all blend together. It's now cut and dry each song. So, yeah, so it's a learning.
It really is fascinating. And with Yorg in particular, because I got to believe he was built the same way you were built. Like he thought in terms of albums.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, so he's just, let's say he's evolved faster than I have.
Well, I'm trailing all of you guys, so that's all good with me, man.
Funny.
Hey, man, yeah. I'm gonna wrap us up. I'm gonna play "Time to Get Gone." I think that's appropriate for ending the show, and that is off the Voodoo album, if I'm correct. Great. And I wanted to say, the thing I found fascinating about this song is it has a bit, I don't even know if you know this band, but it has a bit of a Savoy Brown vibe to it.
No, I don't know. But now you're,
oh my God, which is a huge compliment for me. Cause I love the old 70s or 60s British wave band that was rather progressive.
That sounds awesome.
It really dug in on the blues that band did as well. So, and it kind of reminded me of that. But I want everyone to know where they can get a hold of your material. So if you would take the time to just say who you are and where you can be found, it would be a great way to bang out the show.
All right. So again, thank you, John. This has been a pleasure. It's been always, you know, great to catch up with and talk to you. It's always something I love. It's part of being a music that I really enjoy. So, and thank you so much for playing my songs. Of course, as you know, it's a big deal when you're an artist trying to get your music out there. So I so much appreciate your time.
You're more than welcome.
So we're Ryan Neville and the Midnight Blues Band, and you'll find us on all the, we're on 12 digital stores, everything from Spotify to Apple Music, et cetera. So easy enough to find. And as I said, enjoy the music that we'll keep putting. We've still got an album sitting, waiting, that will be released about this time next year as well. So there's always more music. So please come back and check us.
Ryan, thank you so much for being on, buddy.
Thanks to you, John. It's been a pleasure.
When your life feels off the tracks and you're down on your luck, you just feel it's time to get gone. When you're looking for some information, you're like a bloodhound that's hot on a trail. Now you start to drag your feet cause you're feeling pretty beat and the heat's as hot as hell. It's time to get gone. It's time to get gone. When you feel like giving up, it's time to get gone. When you're down on your luck, you know it's time to get gone. Get gone.
shake it out of your head, 'cause you feel like you're already dead, and you got no need to stay. It's burning the light of day. You feel it's time to move on, it's time to get gone. When you're down on your luck, you know it's time to get gone, and you feel like giving up, it's time to get gone. It's time to get gone.